Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. As presiding judge, my name is Wade Birdwell today. I'm joined to my right by Justice Dabney Basil and to my left by Justice, what's your name again? Mike Wallet. And we're here today. We have two matters to be heard by oral argument today, and so we will hear those cases at this time. If you would call the cases, please.
The court will now call Arlington Professional Firefighters et al. Versus City of Arlington, Texas et al. May it please the court. Ms. Megan Michak will argue for the appellate. Mr. Chad Arnett will argue for the appellate.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Megan Michak, and I am here on behalf of the appellants in this case, which includes six of the hardworking employees of the City of Arlington's Fire Department, as well as the Arlington Professional Firefighters, which, until the city unilaterally withdrew from Meet and Confer, was those employees' exclusive representative. This case stems from the appellant's decision in late 2016 to seek the protections of Chapter 143 of the Texas Local Government Code, which you will hear me commonly refer to as civil service. Civil service is a statutory scheme that governs some employment conditions for covered firefighters and police officers. The purpose of the Civil Service Act is to ensure an efficient fire and police department who are composed of capable personnel free from political influence. APFF and its members, as you've seen in the documents, wanted Chapter 143 because certain employment decisions needed to be fair and based on merit. The city, including city employees and the city council, opposed that measure for that exact reason. As part of its statutory scheme, Chapter 143 provides minimum requirements for sick and for vacation leave, as well as certain specialty pays, and includes specific provisions relating to hiring, promotions, and discipline.
Council, my recollection of the record is this is the third, this particular referendum was the third attempt to apply civil service protection to the firefighters. Is that correct?
That is correct, sir. The other two had failed.
Were the other two sponsored by the representative organization?
Yes, they were.
Okay, so we're dealing with the third time's the charm, if you will, by this association.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember seeing in the record anywhere that there had been any type of retaliation after the two failures that might have prevented the third attempt. Is there any kind of indication of any type of retaliatory action by the city with regard to the association or with regard to other members of the association with regard to the rights being expressed the first two times?
There was no evidence of that in the record, sir, and we would posit that that was because there were different parties involved in the first two attempts, as well as the retaliation stems from the success of this particular attempt.
Okay, in what respect were there different parties?
There was different leadership within the department as well as within the city itself.
Okay.
But as you indicated, ultimately the city or the APFF was successful in May of 2017 in having the civil service adopted or Chapter 143 adopted in the city of Arlington. And as soon as the referendum passed, there were questions about how Chapter 143 would be implemented. APFF and the city were at odds about whether Chapter 143 was immediately applicable, because under the statute, it required that the city become a civil service jurisdiction by the start 30 days after the start of its next fiscal year, so as of October 31st, 2017. And under the statute, by that time, the city was required to ensure that its policies complied with Chapter 143 and to install a civil service commission. Originally, APFF took the position that its members were entitled to the statute's protections immediately, but the city insisted upon what it called feathering of the implementation. Which
anything in Chapter 143 that talks about transitions from non-Chapter 143 employees' rules, protocols, etc., to once there is, in fact, an adoption of Chapter 143 protocols, anything in the statute, legislature provide in any way, shape, or form for transitions?
In short, no. Other than providing a deadline whereby civil service had to be enacted and what that would look like as far as the requirements for a civil service commission and that the civil service commission have rules, how the city and the employees got to that point is not laid out in the statute.
Have there been any cases addressing a transition such as this from non-143 to 143 where there's been an argument that rights, et cetera, that were enjoyed by the organization and its members before the transition to 143 were lost in the transition?
No. There has been no other litigation of this type. And I would add that many of the jurisdictions of this size that transitioned over to 143 did so many, many years ago. And so that may play into the lack of litigation. But there is no case law that would have guided the implementation of civil service in this particular case. The city announced shortly after the referendum passed that the employees were going to have to pay for civil service and that they were going to have to lose some benefits in order to pay for additional personnel that the city believed would be necessary in order to implement civil service. However, the city was never able to provide a firm number for how much that cost. It provided multiple figures throughout the implementation process, which you saw in your materials.
What power do we have to look behind the city's discretion in making that decision?
The city, your power to look behind that discretion is to consider whether the city acted in a way that was unconstitutional. And if the city acted in a way that was unconstitutional because of an unconstitutional motive, then the plaintiffs posit you would have the ability to look at how the city implemented Chapter 143 in this situation.
So it turns on the retaliation claim exclusively?
No, it does not, because there are the plaintiffs have other constitutional claims relating to the ordinances. The payment and the loss of the specialty pay is one of the ordinances that was enacted, and there are we have constitutional claims, free speech and assembly, as well as the equal protection claims, which again, the city was not permitted to implement this in a way that was unconstitutional, that violated the plaintiff's constitutional rights, either because it was retaliatory or because it would have the effect of chilling their speech or chilling their assembly. Immediately after the referendum passed, the city promoted employees pursuant to the then existing promotional lists, which were not civil service compliant because the final scores and rankings were not based as on written tests, which is the requirement of the Civil Service Commission, but as they were based on written tests, skills assessments, and interviews. The city made more promotions from those lists in June of 2017. However, the lists were set to expire, and when APFF, the association, attempted to interact with the city to find out how they were going to handle this, the city decided to conduct yet another non-civil service compliant promotional process. But it refused to eventually promote anyone off of the existing promotional lists. And that is one of the claims in our case of retaliation, of violation of the employees' law.
Okay, under Chapter 143, mm-hmm. My understanding from responsive briefing is that promotions are based solely off of the written testing, okay? And so if the pre-transition lists are predicated upon non-143 established criteria, which include things other than the written testing, okay, at what point in time, at the very least, would not the list become obsolete in effect at the time they go to Chapter 143, because then literally statutorily the city is not allowed to take those into account.
And that is the appellant's position, is that when Chapter 143 was implemented, so as of October 31st, 2017, that is when those lists should have transitioned over. In this particular case, the appellees, the city, originally stated its intention to comply with those lists. As I mentioned, they did in fact make promotions off of those lists, and in September of 2017, supposed to begin on September 21st of 2017, the city had scheduled interviews, so non-compliant with the civil service, but interviews nonetheless for the promotional process. Those interviews were canceled without explanation by the assistant chief at the direction of the chief on that morning.
Was there anything with regard to the original pre-143 protocols for promotion that established a deadline by which a vacancy had to be filled from the lists, okay, that would inform us with regard to the transition from October 1st to October 30th or 31st?
Yes, sir. There is a...
In other words, if something came open literally in the transition period, okay, then... Without a 143 compliant situation, commission hasn't been established, etc. Is there anything to indicate that the protocols that were in place before that have to remain in force and in fact have to be complied with until such time as 143 is implemented?
Yes. There was a fire department SOP, which is contained in Appendix K of our brief, SOP 101.11, and that indicated that the promotions must occur at the beginning of a full pay period, and it describes when they occur based on when the vacancy came up.
Okay, what ordinarily would have been the beginning of a full pay period?
So ordinarily what would happen is an employee would retire at some point during a pay period, and then whenever the next pay period commenced, that's when the next employee would have been slotted into that. And the dates would have been different for each of the affected employees, dependent on when the vacancies came open.
Okay, well, let's say the vacancy came open after October 1st, a retirement's announced.
Mm-hmm.
The next beginning pay period would be if, in fact, y'all, City of Arlington firefighters get paid first of the month. The next pay period would be
2 weeks later.
It'd be 2 weeks later. Okay,
yes.
So they're bi-monthly. Okay.
Not sorry.
Bi-weekly, bi-monthly. Okay.
Every 2 weeks.
Every 2 weeks is better. Okay.
So if
it was early in the month, the next pay period would be later in the month.
And some of these
it would have to occur at that point in time. And if there wasn't a new 143 protocol, then presumptively the old protocol would be in effect, and that have to be filled.
That's correct. And that, and in fact, just so it's clear, number of these promotional vacancies actually came about prior to October. So when Chapter 143 was enacted, the city informed employees that it may affect their retirement benefits, and so a number of employees decided to retire at that point. There were a large number of vacancies that came open essentially in the late summer, early fall. So even in September, there were a number of vacancies, which again should have been filled at the beginning of the next pay period, pursuant to the policy, pursuant to the past practice, and pursuant to the chief's instructions. And again, the chief's instructions on this are Appendix L, and so those were not filled. During the course, after about June of 2017, the city stopped making any promotions for the employees.
What entity within the city made the decision to alter the promotion scheme? Was it the Civil Service Commission?
So according to the discovery in this case, the instruction not to conduct the promotional exam or promotional interviews, which would have resulted in the promotions, it was the last formal step, was stopped by the fire chief. So he was the one that determined that those interviews would not go forward. And he was the one that would have been responsible for actually making the promotions pursuant to city policy.
But I thought the resolution in the record that actually altered the scheme was from the Civil Service Commission.
The Civil Service Commission, because effective October 31st, once civil service was implemented, because the Civil Service Commission was then responsible for overseeing promotions, it changed the scheme of how things would work within the city. They also, they were the ones that actually nullified the promotional eligibility lists.
And there's no, you have no claim that any members of the Civil Service Commission were acting with a retaliatory motive?
Our claim is that the members of the Civil Service Commission were within that group that was had the retaliatory motive. They were being instructed by the city council. They were being instructed by the fire chief in making their actions. The actions of the city in this case, again, with respect to the promotions, were not the only retaliatory actions, were not the only unconstitutional actions. We did not discuss it, but the city also enacted a number of ordinances relating to how employees accrue and are able to use sick leave, how employees accrue and are able to use vacation leave. There were also retaliatory actions relating to the employees' light duty and other benefits. Thank you.
Thank you. Council.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court. Appellant's case is based on a remarkable proposition that the benefits under civil service that they worked so hard to collect signatures for and obtain by citizen referendum and get implemented are so dismal in the very minimum, as they describe it, that for the city to enact that statute in the manner in which it is written constitutes retaliation or the violation of constitutional rights. Not only does it defy reason and perhaps strain credibility for the appellants to argue that the civil service framework that they sought provides them with fewer benefits than they previously had, that notion is demonstrably inaccurate. Otherwise, they wouldn't have sought civil service in the first place. And otherwise, virtually every city in North Texas that operates under civil service wouldn't do so because some other scheme would be more attractive. In reality, the benefits under civil service are profound, including a stated purpose of permanent employment, of promotions without regard to bias and so forth, and also with respect to benefits, the very benefits that appellants claim are the bare minimum, they're actually quite generous, albeit different from what was available under Chapter 142, the prior governing statute. They're different schemes with different requirements and different benefits.
So, Council, why should this court not find that the declination of the city to adhere to its prior protocols with regard to, for example, promotions, okay, and to delay where the prior protocols apparently do not allow for such delay, why should that not be some evidence of retaliatory intent? Because absolutely you need an opportunity to transition, but until you actually do the transition with, you could have transitioned on October 1st. But you didn't. You waited because you had the 30 days. And in the meantime, you declined to enforce the prior protocols with regard to certain things to the detriment of the individuals impacted. Why should that not be considered by this court to be some type of retaliatory intent?
Two reasons, Your Honor. First, to correct the record, reflects that civil service was implemented by the city over the course of many months after the election, starting with the civil service commissioners being appointed and confirmed in June, and various other
actions.
So what's
the 30-day deadline then?
The 30-day deadline is just, that's just the 30 days leading up to the drop-dead date when everything has to be done. There are a lot of moving parts to implement civil service. Arlington had never been civil service. They had to set up a commission, hire people, do lots of things. That was done.
So back to my original question to council. Opening comes open. You haven't gotten your promotional protocols under 143 in place. You still have the old promotional lists protocols in place. You don't have a means by which you can arbitrarily ignore the prior protocols and then wait until after the new protocols kick in, do you?
Justice Birdwell, we actually, the city actually did, and here's why.
Okay.
There is a fundamental misunderstanding or in connection with their arguments with respect to this promotional right. There was no right to be promoted under the standard operating procedure that had been in effect. It's a fire department operating procedure, and it provided for a promotional process, how it was done, how the exams were held, etc. Critically, it also stated that the department reserves the authority to modify, revoke, interpret, terminate, or change the terms of it at any time, with or without notice, and further, that there is no contractual intent or effect of the manual. So why is that pertinent? Well, that's pertinent because the Texas Supreme Court recently decided the city of Denton versus Rushing. It came out of this court, that decision. And the court said when you have a departmental, in that case it was actually a citywide policy, this is departmental only, that has that language in it, there is no right whatsoever to be promoted under it. It's not a contract. They have no right for that to be followed because it can be amended. Now, here's another reason.
That deals with their contract claim, but they're also predicating their retaliation claim on the alteration of the promotion policy.
That's correct, Your Honor. And the other but to do so, they have to show that they had a right to be promoted in some form or fashion or that they were up for promotion. The SOP provides that the fire chief has the discretion to interview and choose of the top three candidates on the list when filling a spot. There was no guarantee, even if they were at the top of the list, that they were going to be promoted anyways. Now, there's a second part to this, which is why was it nullified when it was nullified?
But it wasn't a situation where the chief was choosing between the top three. The chief was choosing not to choose.
Well, the civil
that apparently was not something that he had the right to do under the protocol.
The Civil Service Commission, Justice Basil's question earlier, is the one who actually nullified the list, and that is in the record at 9:50.
Okay, but you have protocols represented by counsel that you have to fill that spot the next pay period, beginning of the next pay period, okay? And so you know when the opening was, you know when the next pay period is, and the requirement is that gets done. And even with the language that allows for a change, etc., there's nothing in the record here that there was any vote to actually change anything in the interim here in terms of giving the chief the authority not to choose, was there?
Well, the Civil Service Commission's the one that nullified the list, and this was part of a transition period that started in May and culminated with the final deadline. So the promotional list was nullified on October 3rd. The policies and procedures could have been rescinded and were, but the Civil Service Commission nullified that list as part of the process.
So you're saying that there was no instance where a retirement occurred, an opening occurred that had to be filled by the next beginning of the next pay period, where the chief decided not to fill it during that transition, but before complete implementation, October 31st.
The There was an opening in late September that I'm aware of that would have required, I believe, that position to be filled in like mid-October, 2 weeks before the final deadline. And what was decided by the Civil Service Commission, and by the way, was advocated by the APFF in the summer of 2017 in two letters stating, we don't think you should continue to promote under the old system. You should go ahead and convert under Chapter 143. And those are at the record at 177 and 78 and 180 and 81, is that the Civil Service Commission, as reflected in the record, there's communications in there about this decision, believed that the better course, given the proximity to the final deadline, was to honor the spirit of what the appellant sought and the spirit of what the voters sought, and not fill a bunch of positions under the old system that they wanted to get away from. And I venture to guess that had they done so, I would still be here arguing, just arguing the opposite side that we had the right to do so. There's a case out of San Antonio called the Klinger case. In that case, the claim was that under civil service, there was a delay. You were required to promote, and you didn't promote. And this was fully implemented civil service, so that's non-discretionary. And they didn't do it within the time frames. And the reason they didn't do it within the time frames was because I think there were like two candidates, and they wanted there to be more candidates, and more candidates were going to become available because they wanted it to be competitive and place the right people. The court said they had the discretion to do what they did because it was in good faith. It was part of analyzing a dynamic situation, and they substantially complied. They were not in violation of civil service. There was no evidence in the record that the nullification of the list in October of 2017 violated any terms of civil service. There's no legal authority for that. They could have been nullified on day one. There's no legal authority that says they can't be nullified until the last day. And it's not just promotional lists, it's everything else. It's setting up the commission, it's passing local rules. It's doing all the things and putting all the moving parts in place to have it implemented on the final day. There's simply too much to do on one day. The record is it was a phased-in process. This is not an isolated event that occurred pre-final deadline on October 30. Ordinances were passed in October. Four ordinances were passed, one on the 10th of October, three on the 17th. There were lots of things that were done. There was no evidence that that was done in retaliation. And it's amazing to me that the appellants are arguing against being promoted under the system that they sought to have put in place. They wanted the civil service promotional system, but now they're arguing they should be promoted under another system. One other thing I'd like to point out is that undercuts any claim of retaliatory animus. Every one of the individual appellants has had an opportunity to promote. Three of them, since civil service has passed, have promoted. They've been promoted and they've received raises. The other two tested for promotion, and they didn't score as high as the other candidates, so they didn't get promoted, but they've had the opportunity. In addition, all these arguments about pay cuts, there's no evidence of that in the record. No evidence of that. They have not put in any evidence of what their pay was then versus now. We have an affidavit that says that all of the firefighters, in addition to the five in this case, three of which have been promoted and given raises because of that, have received substantial pay raises since civil service was implemented. It just cannot be that implementing civil service, whether it's done on one day or over time, can constitute a retaliatory action as a matter of law. And I would like to point the court to two cases. And these are not in our brief, so I'll give you the cites. But these cases are the Willis versus City of Lubbock case, 385 Southwest 2nd, 617, writ refused, no reversible error. City of Lubbock v. Adams, 149 Southwest 2nd, 820, petition denied. Those cases stand for the proposition that all the city has to do is provide what is required by the civil service statute. It can go above that. That is totally at its discretion. And these cases say that is so discretionary within the city's decision-making process that those decisions cannot even be reviewed judicially. Those cases are very significant. And those cases stand for the proposition that everything the city did complied with civil service, because there's no evidence to the contrary. And all these claims that we should have done more, there's no basis in law or fact for that.
Was there any evidence in those cases of the retaliatory motive that they claim exists in this case?
There was not, but in the Willis case, the claim was that they had a vacation bank, similar to some claims in this case, that the city had actually authorized to be provided under civil service, even though it wasn't required to. And the court said, and the plaintiff said, you've calculated it wrong, you owe me more money. And the court said, we're not even going to look into how the city calculates that, because that is not required by civil service. It's purely discretionary, and we're not even going to review it judicially, because there's no right to it. It's something the city's agreed to provide, but you have no claim to it. There was not a retaliation claim, but it supports the proposition that adopting civil service as it is written, which is what the city did in this case, is all that is required, and it's not a minimum benefit. It provides a significant benefit, otherwise the appellants wouldn't have sought it. Unless there are any other questions, that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
I'll be very brief. I want to address two of the points that the appellees raised. First, with respect to the retaliatory motive, the appellees have not addressed the significant evidence that the appellants have presented of a retaliatory motive. And in this particular case, there is evidence that is above and beyond any of the cases that either party has cited. Specifically, within the appendix and within the record is an anti-civil service, anti-Chapter 143 leaflet that was signed off on by a supermajority of the City Council. That is all but one of the sitting City Council members in May of 2017 signed off that they were opposed to this, they would not vote for it, and that this would put the union in charge of the city. That is ample evidence of anti-union animus and evidence that supports the union's position and supports the APF's position and the appellant's position that there was retaliatory.
So if the city council's members take any position which is adverse, then it becomes evidence of animus?
It may. Under the circumstances in this particular case, when you look at the appendix and you look at the document that these folks signed off on, they made very clear that they did not agree with what the APFF and its members were attempting to do and with what the appellants wanted to do, and that they believe that it infringed on their rights to run the city.
So because you take a position that you disagree with what somebody is trying to do, isn't that just a statement that you differ on a public policy issue than somebody else? Why is that animus for firing?
If that were the only action that the city and the appellees took that demonstrated retaliatory motive, then perhaps it would just be a statement of a policy difference.
So can you add up a series of things that don't qualify and make them qualify?
All of the things would be pieces of evidence that tend to show that there was a retaliatory motive versus a simple policy difference. And again, turning back to the promotional issue, which I think lays out most plainly that retaliatory motive, at the time that the lists were nullified in October of 2017, civil service had not been implemented. Yes, there was a civil service commission that was meeting. That civil service commission had not introduced any rules. That civil service commission had not held a promotional process of its own, nor did it have any plans to do so. Those vacancies pursuant to the SOP should have been filled. Additionally, there is evidence in the record that the city informed its employees that they planned consent to continue with the process. I'll direct your attention to Appendix M, in which the assistant chief of the city indicates that they planned on making promotions from the existing promotional list until October 30th. Again,
let me ask you, I'm sorry, I'm going to distract you here a minute. What relief are you seeking for the retaliation claim?
For the retaliation, we believe that the retaliatory actions should be undone, and that the appellant should be placed in the position that they would have been had those retaliatory actions not taken place. So with respect to the promotions, the individual appellants who were not promoted, and there are two of them, Mr. Rojas and Mr. Graham, should be promoted. Those appellants who experienced a delay promotion should be given the seniority and any other benefits they might be entitled to.
Do you want the city to go back and calculate the pay of each fireman on the basis of what the pay scheme you allege should have been without a retaliatory motive?
Yes, sir. We believe
it. Who is the foundation, or is the association have standing to make that claim?
The association does have standing to make that claim because the individual employees would have the standing to make that claim on their own, but there's no individualized testimony required. Each of the employees has been damaged in the same way with respect to the loss of the promotional opportunity. Any of those employees who lost a promotional opportunity, lost leave, etc., they've been damaged in the same way. So yes, we believe that APFF has the associational standing to make those claims.
Yeah, even with regard to the delayed promotions, aren't you still, even with regard to your remedy, even if you go back to the original lists, that still is left to the chief to choose from the one of three, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so that's, we're not in a position to order that any of the individual plaintiffs actually get the promotion. We're just, all you can ask for is us to put in place the original protocol.
Based on the original protocol, however, the plaintiffs or the appellants in this case would have been promoted. The protocol previously, and there's evidence in the record of this, was that the top employee was promoted, and each of the appellants was the top employee in the slot. They were the next on the list.
So there was never any exercise of the three-person discretion that the chief had.
That is what the evidence has shown, that that discretion had not been exercised.
All right. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
All righty. The case is submitted.